At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. The PFF NFL podcast is brought to you by SimpliSafe. If you've been thinking about getting a SimpliSafe home security system but have been waiting for the holidays when all the tech deals come out, you've made a smart move. Because right now, I can get you a great deal on SimpliSafe. If you go to simplisafe.com/PFF, you'll get their amazing holiday offer. They rarely do anything like this, but they're doing it just for us. SimpliSafe is great protection for your home and family. They don't make you sign a contract, and there's no hidden fees. They're getting great reviews. CNET, PC Mag, and Wirecutter all say SimpliSafe is the best security system there is. So if you're looking for a security system and want a great deal, go to simplisafe.com/PFF to get the offer. Make sure to use that URL because it really helps the show. That's simplisafe.com/PFF, and hurry, this offer ends soon, and Sam and I both got SimpliSafe. It is great. The PFF NFL podcast is also brought to you by Pluto TV, the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all for free. No credit card needed. No sign up. Pluto TV is easy and a completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today. Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with
Mike Renner.
Mike Renner in for Sam Monson. We're live on YouTube. Welcome into all of our YouTube listeners. I can't lie about how many people we have here and all of our podcast listeners. It's YouTube viewers, actually. Mike, you're in for a sickly Sam Monson. Welcome back.
It's good to be back. It's been a while now.
Yeah.
I'm excited. And I got takes. I have so many takes built up. Just, it's going to be a good one.
Listen, we're sitting here. We have millions and millions of listeners on the podcast. We had one guy asking for you last week on Twitter, so I just hope that he's excited.
My fan base, they're everywhere, it seems like.
We love having you on here anyway. You do some, you know, mediocre to solid work, usually. So, a lot to talk about. Week 14, some movements, a lot of good teams losing, just crazy.
It was an interesting week.
Crazy finishes and all that stuff. Let's start with Chicago. Oh, no. First, we got to give Sam credit. Are you aware of what we've been doing on Thursdays with our predictions?
Yes, I've seen some of those.
I mean, he nailed it with Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Absolutely nailed the Derrick Henry thing. So we're sitting there. We were looking through the numbers. We're something like 5 for 10 or 6 for 12 in predicting these things. We might get you in the prediction game, too. Maybe we'll get you in on Thursday to try your hand at it. Can you see the future?
No, I probably will be terrible at that. I'm really good at saying when I was right, though, in the past.
Oh.
And the few times I was right. I'm good at pointing out when I was right.
But. Okay. That's good. It's not helpful for our Thursday podcast, though. All right. Let's get into the...
I did have a take, though, about that Thursday night game.
Oh, okay.
Jaguars.
Yes. Jaguars.
The Titans. Jaguars thought, they didn't realize that Derrick Henry got subbed in for Deion Lewis, so they kept going high on him. They couldn't tell the difference, is my take.
Didn't they see that picture that went viral where Derrick Henry's like this?
They kept thinking it was Deion Lewis. So that was my take on that.
That's your take.
I don't know what they were thinking, though. like four straight guys on that 99-yard run just go at Derrick Henry's shoulder pads as if like that's how you're going to bring down a 6'4 behemoth. Jesus,
he terrible. Also ran. He also ran with ran some.
Hard. Yeah, I know. It was
with some anger.
I'm not going to say I could have tackled him any better, but I couldn't have also tackled him any worse.
You would have at least like rolled at his legs and made him work hard or something. You know, stiff arm from hell with Derrick Henry there, which our friend Jack Collinsworth showed off on Sunday Countdown earlier this year. All right, let's get into last night's action. Especially, let's start with the Chicago Bears. Are the Chicago Bears now? They win 15-6 against the Los Angeles Rams. Are the Chicago Bears a Super Bowl contender?
Here's the only thing. The reason I'll say I don't think so. They're still going to be on the road the whole playoffs. They're still going to have to go through L.A. or New Orleans. And I mean, they could feasibly maybe win one of those games and then get home field again in the championship round. But it's just going to be difficult. I think. Playing, you know, making Drew Brees or Jared Goff go up to Chicago in that weather in the playoffs would be a very good equalizer, especially with the defense that the Bears have.
Right.
But not having home field, it's almost, you know, a very unlikely chance that they do end up getting home field at this point. You know, the Rams and the Saints would have to, you know, basically lose out, which I don't think is going to happen. So not having home field, I just don't foresee them going in and being able to stop them in the dome or in the weather out in L.A.
Yeah, the Bears at home, it's certainly been a huge factor when they're at home. I mean, they did it. You know, they shut down the Vikings a few weeks ago. You know, they played really well against Seattle back in week two.
Yeah,
they still have Green Bay at home, which will be fun to watch. You know, Aaron Rodgers and that passing offense, despite what they've dealt with this year. So the Bears at home have been tough. How much do we attribute last night's game, though? I mean, this was one of the worst quarterback games on both sides, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it was bad
on both sides.
Both sides, Mitch Trubisky and Jared Goff. How much do we attribute it to the quarterback play versus what the Bears did defensively? Because they got some good pressure and they covered well on the back end, but man, it was just quarterbacks were making some bad throws.
I think my biggest takeaway from the Rams offense this last 2 weeks, Jared Goff's probably his worst 2 weeks since last year, obviously, and maybe since even his rookie year.
Yeah.
The interior of that Rams offense line is an issue. Their worst 2 weeks also, by far, in my opinion, that they've played all season. Austin Blythe is an issue at right guard in terms of being able to hold up against the bull rush, and John Sullivan in pass protection has been just getting destroyed by any sort of quality nose tackle. And you even saw it, the play. So Sullivan gives up the sack to force the safety against Eddie Goldman. Terrible right there. And then the next drive, the Khalil Mack forced fumble, you see Roger Saffold, the left guard, trying to help out Austin Blythe when they're sliding, or excuse me, trying to help out John Sullivan against the nose tackle, and doesn't get out to where he's supposed to be and help out Andrew Whitworth with Khalil Mack, and then, oh yeah, Khalil Mack forces the fumble. So you're kind of, if you have to help your interior off the line, it's going to put those tackles on an island more, and that's just not where you don't want your tackles on an island. I don't think any team wants that. So that to me is the biggest issue. And then Goff holding up to that interior pressure, he didn't look like the same quarterback when he has a guy in his face.
Yeah, Goff, he was very streaky last night, but, you know, he made a few good throws, but just most of the time looking uncomfortable, a little bit slow. Even on the sack, it was, you mentioned Eddie Goldman, great pass rush on that play, but Goff just a tick slow across the board. So you can credit on the back end. I love the well-rounded number of pressures that the Bears had. You get four from Akeem Hicks and three from Eddie Goldman, four from Leonard Floyd, four from Khalil Mack. I mean, Khalil Mack was pretty much slowed down in the first half a little bit, but like you said, when you start to move around who's doubling whom and all these different game plan adjustments, Khalil Mack could take advantage. Guys like Jonathan Bullard coming off the bench. I mean, it was a deep, good look. The PFF grades are going to be spectacular on the Bears defense once they hit premium stats and everything. So it's not a great year for defenses. Sam and I have been talking about this all year. Are the Bears the clear favorite as the best defense right now in a year of average to slightly above average top defenses?
Yeah, I mean, there was another defense that slowed down a pretty good offense this past week in Baltimore. So I'm not sure clearly, but I would take them as number one at this point.
All right, let's discuss Mitchell Trubisky, because you weren't around when we aggravated every Bears fan. By the way, they used to be, I haven't checked the numbers again, they used to be the city that most of our listeners got, our best city.
Chicago.
Chicago.
Still there.
And then I trashed Trubisky. And maybe they all disappear.
Yeah.
But he was just as bad as Jared Goff, if not. I think he was worse than Jared Goff, because Goff at least made a few nice throws beyond the sticks and moved the chains and then made some terrible ones. Trubisky was terrible throwing beyond the sticks.
This reminded me of growing up watching the Bears, Rex Grossman, 06. This was a classic 06 Bears win where Rex Grossman does everything in his power. In this case, Mitch Trubisky does everything in his power to try to lose you the game.
Right.
But you're just so good everywhere else that you end up coming away with a win over a very good team, but it had really zero to do with Trubisky's play. I mean, 33.3 passer rating, one completion, 10 yards plus down the field on 9 attempts.
He was one for 10 is what I'm seeing, with 3 interceptions.
Rams, yeah, I would say the Rams caught more balls downfield than the Bears.
3 times as many, in fact. Trubisky, you know, he can still do some stuff with the legs, but again, the thing we've been saying all year is that scheme has aided him. The reason why his passer rating is high, I think his passer rating, he dropped from like 13th to 24th or something, or 22nd in the league in this one game, which actually, to be honest, started to match up more with our numbers. Mm-hmm. So is it, look, again, we liked Trubisky coming out. I do like Trubisky overall. I still think he'll be okay. But I'm saying the way he's playing right now, you need Tariq Cohen to make a great play. You need Allen Robinson to make a great contested catch. He's so inconsistent. Can they be that Super Bowl contender, be, you know, with him at quarterback?
I mean, I think the defense is good enough, and we've obviously seen them, you know, take it to the Rams here, but all it takes is one game of Trubisky. That's not going to fly in the playoffs, I don't think. I don't think that's going to fly on the road either, especially if you're going to New Orleans, going to Los Angeles. They're not going to put up 6 points against the Bears in one of those venues. So I think it will be limiting. I mean, Rex Grossman ended up getting them to the Super Bowl, but then again, he didn't do it in the Super Bowl. So I do think over, you're talking about a 3-game sample size, one of those games, I don't think you're going to be able to survive that if you're the Bears.
How about on the other side with the Rams, quickly? Any concerns here? Again, Goff's game against the Lions was actually worse because statistically it wasn't bad. He had 4 picks last night against the Bears, one of which was a Hail Mary, but he threw 2.
One he got hit as he threw.
And one, it was kind of, you know, you got to feel the pocket a little bit, but yeah, he got hit, made it look a little bit worse. But against the Lions, he threw an interception, but he also had 2 passes that should have been pick sixes in the flat that were just like, what are you doing, Jared? It really did look like rookie year Jared Goff. He's taken he's plummeted in the PFF grades over the last 2 weeks. So that was at Detroit. He struggled. Last night at Chicago. What do we make of this for the Rams?
I think it goes back to what I said my biggest takeaway was the offensive line playing probably their 2 worst games these past 2 weeks. And early in the season, they were so dominant. And when he was on fire, he was throwing from pockets, you know, the Dak Prescott 2 years ago, you know, with just could step up all day long, have really nothing to worry about in that pocket. That was the Rams offensive line early in the season. Now, though, it seems like they just can't hold up consistently in a drop back passing game. They have to use play action to give him any sort of time. And when that's the case, Goff just has not been able to execute. And so I do think going up against interiors, Saints have a pretty good interior pass rush. Bears have a good interior pass rush. We know the Cowboys have a good pass rush as well. You're going up against those teams in the playoffs. That's going to be concerning.
Okay, now the big thing for the Rams here is the Saints now take over the number one seed. They've got the tiebreaker. And if both teams win out, and you know it's an NFC championship with the top 2 seeds, the Rams have to go through New Orleans. So it just shows the importance of that game. Let's get to the – we'll come back to some of the other NFC teams. We'll talk about the Saints and some of the top of the NFC in a few minutes. But I want to go to the AFC, and you mentioned the Ravens slowing down the Chiefs' offense. So you can slow down the Chiefs' offense, and they still score. They scored 24 in regulation, 27 total. How scary are the Kansas City Chiefs? Patrick Mahomes has had games this year where he's had the ups and downs, the Brett Favre comparisons, the terrible throws yesterday, bad interception, bad fumble, but also makes the special plays and had the quote-unquote MVP moments everybody's looking for. How scary are the Chiefs that you could slow them down and they still score 24 or 27, however you look at it?
I'd say the Chiefs are scary because you can't fall behind like at all. I think once you cede ground to them, you're toast. Once you're behind 14 points or whatever, that's when they just put the foot on your throat and you're done, because that's when D Ford, you know, can take off. That's when Justin Houston can just worry about rushing the passer, and those guys, you know, can do that when that's all they have to worry about. And that's, you know, the defense has its weaknesses, but in pass defense, if they can just play pass defense, they're a lot better than if they have to worry about the run as well, because we've seen their issues in run defense over the years. So I do think they're scary in that regard, but at the same time, I don't think they're unbeatable. Obviously, the 2 losses, I think there's a lot of teams in the AFC that I could see one game getting the best of them.
So you sound like you're describing Peyton Manning's Colts.
Yes, it's very similar, actually, yeah.
That, you know, explosive passing attack, their whole plan was to get ahead and then let those pass rushers eat off the edge. Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis back in the day. I mean, that's what we're looking at here. Now, those teams also, they struggled in the playoffs. Now, it was a completely different era, right? But they struggled in the playoffs, had a lot of one-and-dones and all that fun stuff until The only time that they won the Super Bowl was 2006, and Peyton actually was terrible during that whole run, but the defense stepped up because of Bob Sanders. So if Bob Sanders shows up for the Chiefs defense, or...
The defense really was terrible,
is
too,
that
in 06.
Eric Berry? Like, if you just pulled Eric Berry out, then boom.
Yeah.
He's their Bob Sanders, and the defense is good, and they go on their run.
That could be. That's actually very interesting. Is he slated to even be back?
Or? I don't know. We should research these things. No, the thing with Mahomes, though,
Thursday.
Again, he
he's
ends up with a
Thursday.
He's back. He's their Bob Sanders.
That is actually, I love.
Down the stretch
here. You're onto something here.
Or is it Booger? Because Booger was great down the stretch, too, a nose tackle for the Colts. All right, that was 12 years ago, Mike. 2006. That run feels like yesterday.
It really was, though, incredible if you go back and watch how bad that Colts defense was that whole year.
So it was like week 14 or 15. They gave up 400 yards to Jacksonville on the ground.
Yeah,
demoralized on the ground to awful. Jacksonville, and they won the Super Bowl that year. Which is why, like, doing like weekly takes and all that stuff. Like, imagine that back in the day. There's no way the Colts could win the Super Bowl after
with
giving up 400
defense?
Yards.
No.
But the Chiefs, man. It's like they're always one play away with Tyreek Hill. They're always one play away with Mahomes and what he could do outside the pocket. I mean, look at the pressure numbers we charged. We charged him with 8 pressures, Patrick Mahomes himself, because of his running around and all that stuff yesterday. But again, it's just he makes more positives than negatives, and they're going to score a ton of points.
I'll just say this. I do think... I would love like their chances a lot more in the playoffs with Kareem Hunt. As much as running backs don't matter, he was good enough that in terms of what he could do in the pass game and run game, just keeping him on schedule, he was a substantial upgrade over Spencer Ware. Now, Spencer Ware is not a bad back by any means, but Kareem Hunt, I think, was special enough that if you get into a bad weather game in the playoffs, which, you know, Arrowhead's outside, Gillette is going to be outside, if you're playing one of those venues, that I would have liked to have had him.
Look, I think you're right. I was on Mike Tirico's podcast a couple weeks ago, and he was asking about that, right? Like, how much will Kareem Hunt or a running back really matter in the playoffs? And again, running backs, they still matter. Like, everything matters, right? It's just about how much do they matter. I look at balance in the NFL like this, though. The ability to pass short, intermediate, and deep, and run the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, if those four things, if you're good at all those four things, and I think the best teams, when you take away one of them, they can adjust and do something else. So running the ball is still a part of that, and Kareem Hunt did a really good job of at least maximizing what the run game was in Kansas City.
Well, I heard of my favorite way to describe balance is you want to be able to attack every zone of the field, whether that be wide, down the field, intermediate, wide. So if you're if 50% of your plays are into the line of scrimmage between the numbers, if that's the zone you're attacking, which is aka the run game, that's not balanced because you're oversampling one zone of the field. If, you know, 25% of your plays are deep, 25% are intermediate, 25% are what? That's more balanced. So I do think they're going to maybe struggle in the playoffs with Spencer Ware in that line of scrimmage between the numbers, though.
So luckily for Kansas City, though, they're now 11-2. Mm-hmm. Because of some of the craziness yesterday, namely in Miami with the New England Patriots.
You want to talk about that, Steve?
The Kansas City
a little therapy session about that?
I don't need it.
Okay.
The Kansas City Chiefs sitting pretty.
Yeah.
As far as the number one seed goes. Now, of course, this Thursday, they're going to play the Chargers. It's a huge game. If they win that game, it's pretty much all but locked up.
Yeah.
The number one seed all through the playoffs. We know we've been talking about home field quite a bit on the show already, how important it is playing on the road. I mean, it really does change. It just changes the dynamic so much, home and away. So the Chiefs are sitting pretty. What happened in Miami yesterday with the New England Patriots?
Which, unfortunately, we don't have Sam to break down the rugby aspect of it.
We need a full
really
video
was not,
on that.
It was more the rugby defense aspect of it, about how terribly executed their rugby defense was. Just crease
like bad rugby defense. Why did only like 3 Patriots end it, finish like
they
in
were,
the in the screen?
I was going to say.
They were all just like
if you
playing
just
backside.
Back, everyone was like holding, no one flew to the ball.
Right.
Usually you just want to fly you have to have a handful of guys flying to the ball. Maybe one or two guys who aren't even close stay deep. But you saw, you know, Stephon Gilmore could have easily made a tackle at some point, but he's, you know, waiting probably about 10 yards away for a pitch where it's like that's to the point where you just go make the play. Just make sure the first guy goes down. If you get beat by like 4 laterals, so be it. Don't let him make 2 and have a guy just run 50 yards.
So one of my takeaways on this whole thing is they got the ball into Kenyon Drake's hands. Last year we saw probably a more improbable play with what Tyreek Hill did, even though it wasn't the end of the game. And it wasn't improbable as far as like win probability goes. But Tyreek Hill legitimately like outrunning and juking four players that were in position to stop him is more ridiculous than what Kenyon Drake did. But that's my takeaway. If you're going to do these last gasp plays, set up your best athlete, Kenyon Drake or Tyreek Hill, and let them go do it. I mean, that was really well executed by Miami, as poorly as it was executed by the
was
Patriots.
It well? I mean, like, not to say was it well executed, not to question, because it obviously turned out for the best, but I don't think there was much rhyme or reason to what they had going on. It was
I thought it was pretty well designed. Throw it somewhat deep,
get a good chunk, and then just have a few guys there for laterals. I don't think there was anything more than that.
It was better designed than most teams go 5-yard curl, and then they're just chucking, and the ball ends up in Tannehill's hands 60 yards away, and it's like, okay, what are you going to do, even though you're a former wide receiver?
That really killed the Patriots.
Yes.
The playoffs, because they had the win over Kansas City early in the season.
Right.
So if Kansas City did lose at some point, they were going to hold the tiebreaker over them and get home field. Now, not the case.
Right. And we've talked about it on here too. The Patriots have not made it to the Super Bowl when they have to go on the road since 2004. And, you know, so they've struggled on the road in the playoffs historically, for whatever that's worth. I mean, I don't know how much that's worth now, but obviously they've had a better road when teams have to go through Gillette. From a Patriots point of view, first of all, there's that play everybody's going to talk about. Gronk was on the field. Why was he on the field, not Devin McCourty? They're 70-plus yards away. I think that's a fair point.
Yes,
why is Gronk on the field?
That was a fair point.
It's never going to be a Hail Mary.
Are you going to? Who's going to be brave enough to say Belichick screwed up? See if it's going to be you.
Oh, yeah. That was bad. That was a bad decision. So I think what happened was you're just like, all right, last play, throw the Hail Mary defense out there.
Yes.
Just Hail Mary defense, whatever you call that package. Hail Mary defense, Gronk's part of it, and you just go. And there wasn't that much thought into it. Even though they said they knew that the laterals were coming and all this stuff, it's their Hail Mary defense.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's like you're out of Hail Mary range. It should be...
Not Hail Mary defense.
Not Hail Mary defense. Not Gronk.
Or two different ones, maybe.
Not Josh Gordon.
Yeah.
You know, Josh Gordon probably would have been better for Hail Marys than Gronk anyway, the way he's moving around these days. So that was bad. From a Patriots point of view, though, you've got Brady taking the sack at the end of the first half, which left points on the board. You have a missed field goal, and you have a missed extra point.
Uncharacteristic.
Yes. I mean, there was some... Brady played awesome from... like, he threw the ball probably as well as he did all year, but that was a terrible play. Still missed a few throws. But, I mean, the defense wasn't good. I mean, there's so many different things from a New England standpoint where, like, you don't really deserve to win that game against Miami. And from a Dolphins standpoint, they're sitting there at 7-6 now, like everyone else, looking for an AFC wildcard spot.
I don't know how that's even possible. They feel like the Bills from last year, where it's like, this is pretty clearly not one of the best teams in the NFL yet are going to...
I think it's worse than the Bills, because last year you could look at the Bills and say, look, as bad as this run defense is, they could stop the pass. They are really tough to pass the ball on, and that like keeps you in games.
Dolphins corners are good. I mean, like, Minkah Fitzpatrick has played well for a rookie. Xavier Howard is a playmaker in the back. They have a good pass defense themselves.
They're okay. Fairly. They get torched,
but they're not,
though, quite a bit.
Yeah, they're not as good as the Bills were a season ago.
They've got a bad defensive line, bad linebacking core. I don't know what's happening. Tannehill.
Adam Gase, if they do make the playoffs, should be coach of the year probably.
I don't know.
Because they had no business.
No, they really have no business. Ryan Tannehill continues to be the guy that has the worst PFF grade with the best numbers. He now has the number 6 passer rating because he gets all those yards yesterday. 69-yard touchdown,
they
whatever
do
it was.
Scheme up some great screens there. And
he's tied for the league lead with he's got like the second or third highest passer rating on screens. So, and you know, Mahomes is up there too, and people are like, why aren't you trashing Mahomes? It's like, because he has a sample size of 400 other throws that were awesome. Tannehill has a small sample size of not good play that's leading to really, really good numbers. He's now 6th in the NFL in passer rating, for whatever it's worth, at 105.7, including getting all those free stats yesterday on the Miami Miracle. So Tannehill is awesome because he's having the worst year of his career and the best statistical season, and here we are to tell you about it.
In year 7 of the Tannehill era in Miami.
In the breakout Tannehill era. So it's fascinating what Miami's doing. Ravens are 7-6. The Colts are right there. The Colts, they beat the Houston Texans. So speaking of the whole, you know, now, so you've got Kansas City's looking really good for the number one seed. So you have New England, Pittsburgh, and Houston all vying for the number two seed, and they all lose yesterday. Pittsburgh losing to Oakland, Houston losing to the Indianapolis Colts. What are your thoughts on the Texans? Because we sat here last week on the podcast and said, okay, they're not nearly as good as their 9-3 record. They've snuck through a few games. But credit them for being in this position.
I think with Deshaun Watson at quarterback, I sort of frame the whole AFC right now on who can beat the Chiefs at this point, because the Chiefs are fairly clearly the top team there. I think they're one of the teams most capable in terms of, you have a couple good pass rushers in Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt who can actually track down Mahomes when he makes those, you know, second reaction plays. They can track him down and make sure those get stopped to some degree. You have a quarterback in Deshaun Watson who can make plays against the Kansas City Chiefs defense that cannot hold up for too long in coverage. I don't trust them to hold up if Deshaun Watson does break the pocket against them. He can make some plays on the field. So I can see him going throw for throw with a guy like Patrick Mahomes. The Texans are one of the teams that can beat him, but at the same time, very flawed. That offensive line, still a huge issue, just got awful at basically every single position up front. I think their tackles have allowed the most and maybe second most pressures of any tackle in the NFL. Just not good up front, as I'll say. So issues there, but I mean, that's one of the teams I could see catching lightning in the bottom. I do still think they win the AFC South.
Isn't it fun thinking about the post? Like, let's push Brady and Breeze out of the league for a minute. Even if you push Rodgers and Rivers out of the league a little bit, and you see, is the future of the AFC, you know, Andrew Luck, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Derek Carr? No. But like watching these guys all dueling for Lamar Jackson,
Cody
Andy
Kessler.
Dalton, Jeff Driscoll. Okay, now we're ruining our list here. Who am I missing? Sam Darnold, Josh Allen.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, like watching these guys, just this new breed of quarterbacks, I kept saying for a while, once those top guys get pushed out, it's going to be just a crapshoot. Like, who's going to be the number one guy? I think Mahomes is playing at this level, though, that is sustainable. Even when he loses playmakers, because he's in this great situation, Andy special, even when he loses those guys, he's still going to find a way to get the job done, I think. Watson, I'm not ready to put Watson. I think Mahomes has been far more impressive than Watson, though.
Yes, I agree.
In their 2 years. Watson statistically has been outstanding, but it's also been one of those, just like the Tannehill thing, it's been a little inflated. But I do love what Watson can do despite this not-so-good situation in Houston. If they can make the situation better against around him, then he's putting up some crazy numbers, I think.
Yeah, the quarterbacks in the AFC went from ugly, I feel like, to begin the year. Didn't look like it would be great until now. It seemed like the NFC was, the balance of power was swinging towards the NFC. Now you get, you know, Baker Mayfield also.
Baker too.
Yeah,
how
you get
forget my
Mahomes,
guy?
You get these guys and Andrew Luck's back now. All of a sudden, AFC's on the come up, and I could definitely see them being the conference to beat in, you know, in the years to come.
Let's discuss the Steelers for a second. We're sitting there in the office, Mike, watching Big Ben. I mean, was there anything more obvious than Big Ben's just going to wait for Josh Dobbs to screw up enough to blow the lead, then come back in? Was there anything more obvious than that? Were there odds on that anywhere?
It was so perfect. We just kept saying, we're like, no, Ben, you know, Ben ran out. And we're like, no, he's not going to come in until Dobbs really screws this up so he can be the hero.
Right.
And I was saying he had to put on, he was asking the doctors to put on some sort of brace or something so that he could let everyone else know that he was hurt. He wasn't going to get back out of the field until everyone could know that he was hurt and that this was going to be painful for him to lead them back to the victory. And I mean, he basically did. He did all he could in the two drives. The field goal, though, was comedic.
That was pretty bad.
That was, you know, Oakland Coliseum's last stand.
They haven't, I don't put too much stock in, you know, like New England hasn't won in Miami. It's a tough place to play through the year. Like, it doesn't mean anything for this year. Pittsburgh hadn't won in Oakland in 10, 15 years, whatever it was. And they hadn't played in like 5 or 6 years. So it's like, what does that even matter? They've lost their last three. But is there a thing to that? Like, you know, you're playing in Oakland and it's just tough and the Raiders are, you know, playing one of their better games and all that stuff. I don't know. But it came back to play.
One the Steelers could not afford to drop there. I mean, they might realistically lose the division now.
They could. Yeah. I mean, the Ravens are there because Pittsburgh. Look at Pittsburgh has to play home against New England, at
Saints.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
After that, so they could lose, and they've lost their last.
They're
three.
No lock by any means to even make the playoffs at this point, which is
not with that
crazy
schedule.
To think. Yeah,
and they've got Baltimore in Week 17. Yeah. Is it? No, I'm sorry. Baltimore's playing Cleveland. Pittsburgh's got Cincinnati in Week 17. So, but like the next two games are tough.
But
the Jeff Driscoll Bengals in Week 17, they should be okay. Big Ben, though, he continues to defy the odds, too. He's having his worst graded season in a long time, in forever. And yesterday, his two touchdowns, a tip at the line of scrimmage where Juju makes an incredible catch, and then a pass that somehow gets through the defensive end linebacker that could have been easily picked and gets through for the touchdown. Statistically, Big Ben was great. Grade-wise, was not. Once again, he's had so many games like that this year, Mike.
Hey, he's just all over the place in terms of the windows he's throwing into down the field. Sometimes it's guys running wide open. I mean, he has two of the better receivers in the NFL. You know, one arguably the best, Antonio Brown, Juju, getting there. So sometimes he's thrown into just these gaping windows, and sometimes he's forced it into Antonio Brown when they is bracketed inside outside, and there's just no chance of it ever getting through. And it's basically, it's weird because that's not, you feel like you should be getting, avoiding those more with old age, and he's throwing more of them, it seems.
But I always put the Steelers in that scary category, because you're talking about the teams that can compete with the Chiefs. I mean, in any given game, Big Ben's going to put up 400 yards, and even if it looks ugly, I mean, he could put up a spectacular game. So there's a lot of, like, what ifs. Even inconsistent quarterbacks like that, you just don't know which way they're going to be come playoff time. So if they do get in, yeah, they're dangerous just like they are every single year. I never trust that Steelers defense, though. Like next week against New England and then against New Orleans
the
next
2 weeks. It's built to take advantage of bad quarterbacks, I feel like, because of how zone heavy it is. And they just rely so much of their pressures on blitzes. And when that's the case, good quarterbacks usually, for the most part,
they're going to torch the blitz.
Yes. Yeah. Like we saw with Phillip Rivers in the second half of that game. You see with Brady every year in the playoffs, seemingly. Patrick Mahomes, obviously, early in the season was just, you know, lighting them up. So I do think they, of all the teams in the AFC right now, I don't see them having a good chance of sneaking through. They just don't have.
They got lit up by Blake Bortles in the playoffs.
They don't have it defensively.
We'll talk about it on the preview podcast, but Pittsburgh and their game plan every year against New England is always fascinating. You know, play zone, rush three, blitz. Last year they tried to play man coverage. They've tried everything and struggle against New England. We'll see what they do as far as this week goes. But yeah, I think the resounding takeaway in the AFC, it went from, there was a point in the day where Patriots fans were like, wow, the Chiefs could lose. You got this in hand in Miami. The Patriots were ready to just take over the number one seed. And then they're like, oh, you're going to play Pittsburgh and then the Jets and Bills. New England's going number one. Super Bowl's going through Gillette. And then all of a sudden things flip. The Chiefs win in overtime. And now the Super Bowl's going through.
And now
through.
It's basically just, can someone beat the Chiefs in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's going through Arrowhead. That was what happened yesterday, week 14. That was the AFC action yesterday. It was just an unbelievable turn of events. A lot of fun sporting, Mike, is what happened yesterday. Let's flip back to some of the NFC stuff. Cowboys-Eagles. Because you have the Cowboys now fully in control of the NFC East. After this division was just, you know, back and forth. The Redskins were making a run. The Giants are creeping up with 5 wins now, Mike. They're not good still. But the Cowboys pull out a crazy game with the Philadelphia Eagles. We've been talking about the Cowboys defense for a while here, but all of a sudden, like, all hell broke loose in the fourth quarter.
I was going to say, Jerry Jones just pumping his chest after Amari Cooper goes off for 200 yards against the biggest, you know, the division rival in the, you know, the Eagles. And the trade looks good for them now. Like, the trade has, to some degree, they're still a pretty anemic offense. They still can go in the tank quickly, but it's added a downfield element, which they were sorely missing. And it's why they're winning. You know, it's why they're going to win the NFC East now.
Dak had one of the weirdest 455-yard passing performances you'll ever see. I mean, he threw the ball 54 times. This is the thing I've said about Dak for a while now. Like, I always wanted him in that rookie season. I wanted to see him in an unprotected setting go throw the ball 45 times and go win a game, you know, for your team. And I still don't. I'm not convinced that he did that necessarily yesterday. I thought Amari. I mean, look, the final touchdowns. That falls incomplete 99.9% of the time. It happened to pop up and Amari catches it, so it inflates the stats. Amari made some nice plays on the deep ball, but Dak had 2 terrible interceptions. Also, for the second straight week, they had a wide open, like, what would have been a game clincher. They're winning late. They get aggressive. They throw the ball down the field. They have a wide open receiver, and he misses them. He did it against New Orleans a couple weeks ago. He did it yesterday against Philadelphia. He's missing these easy throws still. This was an unimpressive 455-yard passing performance.
This is the year of the unimpressive 400-plus yard games.
It's the NFL, man. It's the NFL today. I hate being this guy. I hate to just be the wet blanket of reason, as Greg Bedard likes to call himself in New England media. Just like throwing the wet blanket when you're like, oh, 455 passing yards. Like, even Wentz. Wentz is just defying all the odds statistically, playing just bad football and coming out on top statistically over the last few weeks, other than the Saints.
The NFC picture, though, is now very interesting, because you have the 1-2 is going to be Saints-Rams in some order at this point. The 3-4 is going to be Chicago-Dallas, again, in some order. Very dichotomous completely different teams. You're going to see two games if those two, if it stays that way, which I do think there's a clear delineation, distinction here between between those four and then basically everyone else in the NFC. I think those are the best four teams in the NFC. Everyone else has some pretty critical flaws. And so if that ends up being that divisional round matchup, that will be two of, if those are the games, two of the best, you know, playoff matchups in recent memory, because so distinctly defensive teams versus so distinctly offensive teams in this year of the offense, right, who ends up coming out on top. I do think it's a very fun NFC playoff picture this year.
See, I don't know that Dallas, I like Chicago. Chicago at home, again, is a thing. But when you have teams like tonight's game, Minnesota and the Seahawks, you know, vying for those wild card spots, those could be some really good wild card games, though.
I'm not saying that any of those teams are locked to move on by any means, but the interesting thing about Dallas, they play a vastly different just brand of football,
right,
than everyone else. They have this incredible defense at this point. You know, Byron Jones, great corner, DeMarcus Lawrence, the linebackers have been Jalen Smith, Leighton Vander Esch, two of the best in the NFL this year. They're shut down basically everyone over the past handful of weeks. And then they play this offensive style where it's as run heavy as anyone else in the NFL, ball control. They're not explosive plays. So they're shortening the game as well as any team in the NFL right now. And when you shorten the game, you basically add in a layer of randomness, because the fewer possessions, the more likely that one bounce going one way or the other,
that's the underdog,
is going to, yes,
story,
is going to,
right,
affect the game, is going to really drastically change the outcome. And so I think they have a good chance of playing, you know, five straight wins at this point. They have a chance of playing spoiler in the NFC, whereas I think, you know, prior to that Eagles game, a handful, whatever that was, 6 weeks ago now, people were expecting Jason Garrett to get fired and out on the street.
The sky is falling, is that what I said? The sky was falling in Dallas a month and a half ago. Now, in control of the NFC East, tonight's game with Seattle and Minnesota, just huge for wild card implications. I mean, if Seattle wins, they go to 8-5, and that moves the Vikings to 6-6-1. Who's getting that second wild card spot if that happens?
That second wild card spot could be feasibly below 500.
You've got the Panthers in the mix at 6-7. Packers are still technically in there, right, at 5-7-1?
Technically.
Technically?
Just technically. The Redskins are at 6-7, but not in the mix, obviously.
No. They do not have the quarterbacking.
And the Eagles, just that secondary at this point, just RIP. Everyone's down. It hurts to watch cornerbacks who have deep zone responsibility bite on play action as much as the
Eagles
cornerbacks.
They're doing it every week.
Still. Yeah.
They're doing it every week. Deep third responsibility, which is like, all right, you're just, if the run gets to you, it's everybody
like,
else's fault.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
and you're biting on the run and letting dudes get behind you. So it's been a little ugly in the secondary for Philadelphia. So the NFC still wide open. We'll see what happens with the Seahawks Vikings. You have any quick take on Seahawks Vikings, even though this is, a lot of people are going to be listening to it? This could be your chance to predict something.
I do think that I still think the Vikings are better on the record. So I do think the Vikings end up even on the road against the Seahawks team. I just don't think the Seahawks have the pass rush to where you just have to have somewhat decent of a pass rush. I don't think the Seahawks have that this year to be able to affect Kirk Cousins. So see, I'll go Vikings. But
in Seattle.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins, the roller coaster's down. I think it's going to
come
up.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. You've been down Kirk Cousins. He's due for one.
And last year he had a great win in Seattle. That was like one of the reasons why Minnesota signed him. Look, he can win on the road, like these one-off touchy-feely deals. All right, let's get through some of the rest of the league really quickly. We finally got to see Sam Darnold versus Josh Allen.
We're going to see it for the next decade.
Exciting.
Though,
right?
Hopefully,
Josh Allen.
They're better than that one in terms of quarterback play.
I'm going to have Zach Robinson. I think it's just time to like reset and break down the rookies again. 1 week ago, Josh Allen was the quarterback of the week. This week, one of the lowest graded. I mean, this is the full Josh Allen experience. He rushed for over 100 yards again, right? Over 100? Yeah.
Yep.
9 for 101 with a touchdown, forced missed tackle, 77 of which came on scrambles. If for nothing else, Josh Allen is exciting to watch. But man, the crossbody interceptions and bad fumbles, I mean, those are some of the bad plays that showed up.
That's one of the things where I'm not sure you can ever coach that out of a guy. And it's hard to watch. But if he's still doing it now in an NFL where it's every single person along the way is telling you, do not make the crossbody throw when you're scrambling to the sideline. Do not throw it back over the middle. It's like the cardinal sin of quarterbacking. Don't even try it.
Unless you're Patrick Mahomes.
Unless you're actually, you know, unless you're very capable of it and have done it consistently, which he hasn't. And that's the stuff that worries me. And that if you're still seeing it at this point, is still worrisome.
I have to find the video because he did it against San Diego State in the Mountain West Championship last year or the year before. One of the worst interceptions you'll see. Rolling right, just flipped it back across his body. It was almost identical to what happened yesterday. The thing is, I don't care if you throw back across your body unless if the guy's open.
Yes.
Like there is a such thing as being able to process and see the field, and Mahomes has that. Like Mahomes is going to throw some bad crossbody interceptions in his career, but not as many because he's got a better feel for it.
Mm-hmm.
Allen doesn't have as good of a feel for that. It's stupid. Mahomes, it's like somewhat calculated usually.
Yeah.
Right? Which is why he made that special fourth down play yesterday. So I don't know. That's the difference. And Darnold makes the little comeback, and I think Darnold has that in him. So I think I still have faith in Sam Darnold to turn things around, as ugly as things have been at times this year. And I do think Josh Allen,
I will say,
ups and downs.
Josh Allen's athleticism is enough to where if he can improve any as a pass rusher,
yeah,
and you add him into the run game, like he can be utilized in a Cam Newton-esque offense to what they run there in Carolina, where he's, you know, Cam Newton's, they're dialing up his number 5 to 10 times
right.
a game in terms of options and stuff like that. And it's actually impacting the looks you get from defenses because of how much that, you know, because of how impactful the quarterback is in the run game. I think you can do that with him, but he's still, it's similar to, you know, Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. They're just so bad right now as passers that it's not right. actually making him that much better.
By the way, Lamar and Josh Allen doing it very differently as far as where those rushing yards are coming from. Lamar only had 2 scrambles yesterday for it's designed runs.
Yeah, so
Lamar
they're not Jackson. Actually using in Buffalo. They're not really using him in the designed runs.
Right, they're not using him there yet, and they could. Yeah, and you're right. And Sam had mentioned that as
to be fair. I wouldn't if you're not in the punt right now. Don't get your guy killed.
Don't do it now.
Yeah.
Right. But there is this. I use the phrase "there's a path to success" for Lamar Jackson. You could say the same thing for Josh Allen. There are ways to protect him and use him and hope he improves in different areas. But the path to success for him is use him in the run game a little bit, like you said, but unleashing him downfield and letting him, you're kind of living and dying by using the big arm, driving the ball down the field. The other rookie who was really good yesterday, Baker Mayfield, only 1 real miss. Is that what Neil Hornsby was out there tweeting? Because anytime Baker does well, he gets very excited. So Neil was out there tweeting, I think, only 1 real miss for Baker, a couple big-time throws. He's in the top 5 or 6 in big-time throws this year. Baker's showing off some of the special throws this season.
I mean, the fact that they didn't let him even compete for the starting job there remains absurd. It's like...
Yeah, in this AFC that's wide open.
Yes, you had a chance. They have a team that's good enough with how he's played of late to feasibly have made the playoffs this year but they kind of just toss it out the window. But the good news is, I mean, he looks better than any Browns quarterback we've seen in, the history of our grading. So.
Well, yes. And, the history of the new Browns franchise
since
1999 with Tim Couch. Touch on Falcons-Packers yesterday. Did you see anything different in the Packers offense with no Mike McCarthy?
Not especially. I mean,
nothing.
Rodgers still holding the ball for a while. He just connected on some of those deep throws, whereas, the Falcons' defense has been a sieve.
They've been bad. Rodgers actually had one of his worst graded games yesterday. 2 turnover-worthy throws, was it, that he got away with?
Yeah, 2 Deion Jones picks that luckily fell to the ground for them.
But Aaron Rodgers still sitting there with 1 interception. I think he's up to 6 or 7 turnover-worthy throws. So now he goes
broke the longest streak in NFL history, your boy Tom Brady's, for most attempts without an interception.
Brady had a lot of luck during that streak, too, so...
Yeah, that's
what it's
all
about.
2 draft picks from Woodson against the Packers in that one. Yeah,
2010. Had some bad passes in the snow against the Bears that year too. Yeah, Brady didn't throw a pick after week 4 or something that season. Ended with 4 that year. So Rodgers having some interception luck, but not a major difference with the Green Bay offense. Flying around the league, George Kittle, a monster.
Yes,
I have to say
that
we had
the Broncos. Could not afford. They had the wild card spot somewhat. They had a very good shot at it going into that game. You thought you're going up against one of the worst teams in the NFL. This is locked up. No.
They're a different team on the road. Mm-hmm. It's always been the case in Denver. I think I'm just resigned to this fact. I mean, I know that they beat Jeff Driscoll on the road 2 weeks ago. They did pull one off against the Chargers a few weeks before. Took some freaky plays for that to happen. I just don't think the Broncos are that good. They haven't been that good all year. But yeah, that was bad. George Kittle, they had no answer for him.
I said going into the week, I said I was on Denver radio and I said, you just can't give them free yards. You know, he's not going to beat you with any sort of, you know, Nick Mullins is not going to beat you with his arm. He's going to beat you if you bite on play action and leave some guy running wild down the field. That's the only way
they're
going to
do it.
And that's exactly what happened. You just had to be disciplined against this team, and they were not.
Yeah, so I think Denver has been...
They're
dealing with one of the worst quarterback situations, and as well as you run the ball with Philip Lindsay and the holes that he's had, and he's had a nice season and all that stuff. At some point, you need Case Keenum to go make a ton of plays for you,
won't.
And it's just not there every week. So that's the issue. I think Neil was the only guy who picked the 49ers. You got it right.
That's crazy.
Denver on the road.
Yeah.
So the Raiders beat the Steelers. We talked about that real quick. Any takeaways from the Lions Cardinals game, Mike?
Josh Rosen, you'd like to see just more. It's another thing where you have the worst situation around him. You know, the Bills and the Cardinals, talent offensively, easily the two worst in the NFL. There's just nothing going on for them. But at the same time, you'd like to see improvement from both of them in some manner. You saw a little bit with Josh Allen the last 2 weeks. Rosen, it's not been any.
So I see a lot of people making Josh Rosen excuses. Like, these bad plays are going to disappear once you give him a line. And it'll help. But I still think he's Eli Manning. He's Jameis Winston. Like, even at his best, it's going to be...
There's going to be picks.
There's going to be some head scratchers in there. There'll be some impressive stuff. You just have to give him more opportunity to show that. But there'll be some ugly in there as well. And we haven't really touched on the Saints 28-14 win against the Bucs. I did predict on the preview podcast that this would be, maybe a little bit tougher than people think. And, the indoor-outdoor thing with Breeze and the Bucs are playing a little bit better defense. And they did struggle through it a little bit. But the Saints, again, I think just show... Sometimes their defense steps up. Sometimes it's their running game. Sometimes Breeze just dominates. The Saints just know how to win games in different ways.
Yeah, I think their defense actually a tad underrated at this point. That front four is good. That front four is very good. Sheldon Rankins.
Rankins is playing
Cameron
really
Jordan.
Well now.
I really like, the name. Onyemata, too, has played very well as an interior pass rusher. I like that defensive line. I think it's the top 5 to 10 defensive line in the NFL at this point. But the only thing is, outside of Marshon Lattimore, Eli Apple had a good game, but are you going to trust him? P.J. Williams, that second cornerback, just has the possibility week in and week out of getting toasted at a moment's notice.
We had Sam Monson in the YouTube chat here. Sam saying, don't ruin the podcast without me. You stay home with your sniffles, Sam. All right? He's at home. He's got a little bit of a cold.
Oh.
He's... just skipping out here. It's his own fault.
Is he even doing any work? Is he just taking a day off?
I think he's going to write
his
column. He's a Washington Post columnist, and he's going to write about Mark Sanchez and the Redskins this week. I can't wait. I can't wait to see what he writes about.
He's probably going to get a ton of views.
He might get Wally Pipped here, though. Renner's coming back in.
You guys let us know. Is this better than normal?
Yeah.
Seems better than normal.
Give us the thumbs up if you love Mike Renner and want to see him replace Sam. Is this your favorite duo? I can't do that to Sam, though.
Okay. That's all right.
Because, you'll stand me up. You won't even be sick, and you just won't show up. At least
that's
sick.
True. Sometimes
you know what I'm saying?
Do that. Yeah.
You're just not dependable, Mike. That's radical candor that we express here at PFF. Just got to tell you the truth all the time. Anything else you want to touch on from this week? What about the Giants? You reviewed the Giants in Washington game. Any good takeaways in that one?
The interesting thing is the Giants, I think everyone's known that they're close. Like, they have all this talent offensively. They should be... It shouldn't look as bad as it has. I think they're still very close. Shore up a couple spots on the O-line. Quarterback that's anywhere, just anything capable at quarterback, and all of a sudden I do think you're...
So, as much as we've trashed...
I think they could feasibly next season turn around in a big way.
Where are they getting their quarterback?
That's the only thing. They'd have to be in the Winston... Derek Carr sort of market. Teddy Bridgewater. They have to be...
If they want their next Eli... Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
I am telling you, Jameis has a Super Bowl run in him. He's got one. It might take 10 to 15 years to get there, but he's got one.
I do think that one of those guys could succeed with that level of talent. A lot of quarterbacks could succeed with the level of talent they have at playmaker on that team.
I agree. Now, look, I know we've trashed the Saquon Barkley pick, but as a player, we've always said he's dynamic and all this stuff. He's got some issues, maybe running the ball consistently, but man, some of the big plays he's adding.
Oh, yeah. Like, I've never questioned the fact, his playmaking ability. I never questioned that. Right. But it's just the value you're getting back was always the thing. And I even said I'd take him in the first round, but just not where they took him.
No,
and I think,
not,
but I do think he's ended up even sort of exceeding my expectations of how explosive he's been as a playmaker. I think he's probably a better bet. You know, he impacts the offense more than any of the wide receivers that I think got taken in the first round of this past year's draft.
That's fair. So here's the scary thing is when you do have an efficient quarterback, and we're sitting here 2 or 3 years down the road, if they find that quarterback, I don't think it's Eli. You have Odell Beckham. You have Saquon on the field. You have this creative offense spreading the ball, Sterling Shepard. I mean, again, I don't know how the roster evolves, but offensive line gets better. As a part of a great offense, much like Todd Gurley,
yes,
that offense becomes scary. Building around him is
much better than Todd Gurley,
too. Is the issue.
Yeah.
You think he's better than Todd Gurley?
Much better, yes.
He's got more big play ability. I think, yeah, that's not crazy. All right, man. I think we hit everything.
Yeah,
did pretty good. Pretty good job pinch hitting. We're going to be back. Sam might be back. We'll see. We'll see what happens. We might take it to a vote. Do we want Renner back? Do we want Sam back? I think Sam will be back for our week preview, week 15 preview. We've got one more Thursday night game. That's it for the rest of the season. Chiefs. So it's my last Thursday prediction coming up.
You got to go all out. You got to make it way crazier. Not crazy. You just got to predict a lot.
Phillip Rivers, 6 interceptions. Mahomes, 12 touchdowns. That'll be
not that crazy.
That's too crazy.
It's like go deeper.
Okay, we'll get deep on our Chiefs Chargers preview. Stick with us all week, guys. Thank you for listening as always. For Mike Renner, I'm Steve Palazzolo. Everybody, have a great week. We'll talk again Thursday. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.